Have your weekend breakfast
with Cooks Mhlungu.
Let's walk the talk.
15 minutes after 6 o'clock, joined now by Begisisa Center for Health Journalism reporter Mohale Moloi to speak to us about them doing away with the daily COVID numbers and also the struggles of doing COVID coverage over the last 2 years. Mohale, good morning. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you for joining us. So, why the decision to do away with the numbers, the infographics that the center had been producing over the last 2 years now?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We've come a really long way from that first case on the 5th of March in 2022. Our decision was mainly based on two factors. So the testing numbers for COVID-19 just haven't been as useful as they used to be in the past. And what I mean by that is we're not seeing as many different people getting tested. So the sample isn't as broad as it used to be. So the people who are getting tested right now are people who either get really sick and then they go to their doctor and their doctor wants to confirm what they have. So they're asking to get a COVID test. Or it's people who have been traveling and need to get a test for whatever travel requirements. And now seeing that some of those have been dropped, we're going to get even less of an accurate sample. So right now, we're not getting a full picture with the testing numbers. And then the other reason we decided to drop this is that because when we see an increase in cases, it's no longer translating into those, those family meetings with the president where he'll tell us, oh, lockdown restrictions are going to be in place. Mm-hmm. So that's not happening anymore. And with those two decisions, we've decided as a team that we should step back from reporting these numbers every day. Now, that doesn't mean those numbers aren't important anymore.
And so what happens, for instance, so part of the reason is the numbers aren't, the sample is just not big enough, so fewer people are testing, if at all. And apparently, even at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, apparently there's also kind of a conversation that they're thinking about how they, they're also changing how they're thinking about COVID data. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So in my reporting, I spoke to Dr. Michelle Groom, and she's been sort of heading up the whole surveillance side of things when it comes to COVID-19. And when we spoke, we spoke about how COVID has really predominated our lives over the last 2 years or more than 2 years. And they would like to also move away from, the daily type of reporting. They'll still make sure that all the, all the numbers are there on their website and you can look at them. But they think that, these numbers were mostly useful in what they call an acute outbreak situation, which is kind of what we had in 2020. Cases were going up and we also didn't have much to protect us. We didn't have vaccine and a lot of people had never encountered COVID before. So they want to sort of try get to incorporating COVID into what our routine health, they think it's going to become a seasonal illness. And that we know how to respond to it. They know who the high-risk populations are, and they can, make communications towards those people and tell them, hey, there's a lot of cases circulating. You should take additional measures.
And one of the other things was, which I thought was quite interesting, is sort of this, the challenges that have been involved over the last 2 years, especially for, the Begisisa Center for Health, for health journalism, is specifically around health reporting. Obviously, the last 2 years have been quite, there's been a lot of information to try and work through. It's been quite for someone who's, worked even in the media space, we've never experienced something like this. So it was unprecedented. And so what has the last 2 years been like for the center trying to build produce content that is accurate, that is, timely in this, we saw the disinformation, we saw, all of that. And what was that like working in that context of the last few years?
Yeah. I would say it's been challenging and rewarding. Challenging in the sense that, you know, for us to do these infographics, we had to create teams of two. Initially, it was one person who was handling all of the numbers. And then when things sort of grew and we didn't know that it would grow to be this big, that we had to add the rest of our team on. So we had a system where one person on the team would collect all the data and make sure it's accurate, put in a spreadsheet and make sure it's accurate to what we were given from the department. And then we would try sort of condense it, you know, make it a little bite-sized chunk of all the information that you would get from the SA Coronavirus website, as well as the National Institute for Communicable Diseases website. Mm-hmm. So there were two really big data sets that, you know, it's work that doing one day, I could say it's pretty easy. Anyone could sort of do it. But it's the doing it every day for such a long period of time that made it so difficult. And members of my team shared, you know, that eventually it started taking its toll, because you're looking at numbers of people who are dying. You're looking at numbers of people who've got COVID in every province. And, you know, 2 years ago, we weren't feeling as, in control of the situation as we are now. Mm. So it has been challenging in that sense, but it's also been rewarding because, you know, we would get feedback from people either on Twitter, people writing us to email to say, you know, this has been really useful for us to decide where we're going to go, if I'm going to go to that gathering. Other people have just said, you know, this has been great because I can share it with my mom. You know, some of the data that we get from the government is in very complicated websites. And it's we do appreciate it because it's there, but it was more to distill it into a small piece so that people could share it and make decisions about their lives. And yeah, that's what we found most rewarding about this work.
And in addition, I guess, to doing that work, you know, people using your work, for instance, to make certain decisions, how did you deal with the issue of misinformation? Because I guess while organizations, platforms like you were trying to give accurate, clear, easy to understand information, there was, unfortunately, a great deal of, you know, disinformation, whether it was via Twitter, via Facebook, via WhatsApp, by word of mouth. There was this issue of misinformation. And I wonder how much of your work kind of looked at how, or, you know, if it responded to that issue.
Yeah, I think we chose to respond to that issue in a way where we would try to respond to people who genuinely requested information from us. So, and we'd also try explaining things. So if there was something in our numbers that we posted on that day, that, you know, some days odd things would happen. So for example, maybe there would be a backlog in cases from a specific province, and then they have a big spike. But we try our best to make sure that we explain that, no, the spike became because over the weekend numbers weren't submitted in the right way, and then they all came on Monday, which means there was a higher spike than usual, right? So we would try to take that extra step to explain to our readers and to anyone who would really ask us. You know, misinformation and disinformation are a really big problem, especially on social media. But our way of countering it is to make sure that we've got accurate, up-to-date information on the internet, on our social platforms as soon as we can.
And so the infographics have been done away. You guys did hundreds of them over the last 2 years. What is the next thing? What is your coverage of, because COVID, the pandemic, is not over. Yes, you know, restrictions have been removed in many parts of the world, including South Africa, but the pandemic is still here. So will the center still be doing any COVID reporting?
Yes, we will still be doing COVID reporting when we feel there's something to explain and we feel that there's something that we need to sort of help people get to understand. And we also read people's email all the time, and we try to engage with their questions about COVID-19. So, yes, you're right. The pandemic is not over and COVID is not over, even though sort of a majority of the restrictions have been dropped. It still leaves us with like questions about how do we negotiate or how do we navigate the pandemic now. And, you know, when I asked Michelle Groom from the NICD about this, you know, she basically spoke about things coming down to an individual risk basis. So people have to make their own decisions, you know. And there are different ways for people to do that. Just because we aren't posting infographics anymore doesn't mean people can't go and find these numbers somewhere. So the National Institute has a website, a dedicated page, where they have like these daily numbers that we report. But they also have another thing, which is called a wastewater dashboard. So I don't want to get too into the detail because it's very early in the morning. But basically, every time we go into the bathroom and we flush, our body passes some of, you know, the things that are in our body pass with it. So the viruses or any bacteria, they pass in our wastewater. And scientists are basically able to monitor wastewater, and they're able to monitor illnesses in that to try to see where people are getting sick or where people are sick and they might not know they're sick because sometimes you're asymptomatic, right? So they do that monitoring and they report it on their websites, and you can actually see, I think, down to like your province level as to like how much virus is out there, and it's a pretty accurate predictor of when cases are actually going up. Like they've seen a good correlation with it. So there are resources for people to look at beyond just our daily infographics. And then the other thing I would also say is that, yes, we will cover COVID when we feel that, you know, we can, and it's something that we can explain. But overwhelmingly, you know, there are other things that we do like to prioritize or think we need to prioritize. You know, we can't necessarily neglect conversations like reproductive health or tuberculosis or other ailments that affect people in South Africa.
Because that was going to be my next question, that, you know, over the last 2 years, and understandably so, a great deal of our media space, our spending, our funding has been around managing, you know, this global health emergency, right? But in that time, you know, what kind of has not been neglected, but hasn't gotten as much attention, but remains, you know, quite critical to hear about. So, for instance, in South Africa, we have quite a large number of people living with HIV. But over the last 2 years, have we seen, for instance, that we're not maybe paying as much attention to HIV, tuberculosis, diabetes, as we were rightly focusing on COVID-19?
And I think that's one of the things even the National Institute is trying to, you know, was communicating to me, is that, you know, there are other illnesses like seasonal illnesses like influenza. You know, COVID could be one of them as well. And we sort of need to make sure that these other things don't fall by the wayside necessarily, you know. So I think, yes, there will be a lot more diverse coverage of issues. And there shouldn't be as much of a... there should be a focus on COVID, but I think the focus is that we're moving from an emergency response mode to sort of a management mode and trying to live with COVID, you know, in that new normal that people have been talking about for so long.
And, you know, one of the other things that I saw in kind of the reporting of, you know, Begisisa doing away with the daily COVID cases was, you know, the team speaking about the highs and lows of the data project. What would you describe as a high and a low for you personally of this project?
I think a high for me would definitely be any time we got feedback from someone saying, you know, thank you so much. This is such an easy to understand infographic. We've shared it in our family WhatsApp group, or we've shared it with friends who want to come to South Africa. So when people were actually using our information, I think, you know, those are definitely the highs. We really appreciated those. Some of the lows would, I guess, be, you know, doing that work in the height of, you know, level 5 lockdown. So sort of being inside, you know, we were all cooped up at home, we weren't allowed to leave the house, things like that. And now you would sit every morning and, okay, the numbers are out now, how many new deaths are there, how many new infections are there? And I think over time, looking at that every day definitely did have a toll on like mental health, because, you know, we all have family and we're all worried about someone at some point. So I think those are definitely some of the lows of the situation. But I'm also happy to have, you know, colleagues who are really supportive, and we talk about these things. We didn't just let it lie and affect us. So yeah, I would say those are some of the lows. It came with a lot of emotional work, which we weren't even aware of. But yeah, I think the highs are that, you know, in the end, people actually use the information, and we did our part in a way to help people do the right thing. Yeah.
Mohale, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Peggy Sisa, Center for Health Journalism reporter Mohale Moloi, speaking to us about the center's decision to do away with the daily COVID updates.